I first ran into this lady when I was down at Fort Defiance at their AA club there. Or their club, rather, not their AA club. And she was speaking, and that's what I do. I travel around and, you know, just listen to people who talk. And when someone asks me if I know any good speakers, I can give them a name. And so far, I haven't found any duds. So don't let me down, Deb. And Deb from Fort Defiance, Arizona.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. I'll try not to be a dead. I'm real nervous. I've never done this before, but when Gil here asked me to speak, it was about, 3 months ago, and at that time, I thought that I had something to say, you know, so I said, yeah, and it was okay, you know. And over the last 3 months, I think that the only time I've even thought about coming up here and speaking was to try to figure out an excuse not to be here. So I haven't, you know, I'm up here to speak from my heart. I want to thank the Southern Ute Tribe for allowing us to come up here to this beautiful place, have this camp out here, and for all of you guys who are here. And I guess I'll just start with what happened and what it's like now. When I came into this program, I think I didn't start drinking till I was 19, 20 years old. Prior to that, I was terrified of alcohol, and I was terrified of drugs, and I had seen what it had done to people in my family, what it had done to friends, and I didn't want anything to do with that. And I thought that I was this really strong, capable person, and I was gonna go out there in the world, and I was gonna reach my goals and do things that other people in my family had never done. But somehow or another, like in the big book, it says something about, one of the stories says that this lady didn't count on the feelings of insecurity, the feelings of fear and terror that comes with growing up. I had no way to cope with a lot of those things. And eventually I found alcohol. And it helped. It helped me to do things that I had never done before. Thank you. So get closer to the mic. So that's what I did. I started drinking, and it wasn't, it didn't happen real fast. I didn't drink every day. I drank whenever I had to deal with something. I couldn't deal with anything, so I eventually started drinking all of the time. I had a lot of lessons that I didn't learn over the course of about, 7-8 years with the alcohol. I did things. During my childhood, I had a real unhappy childhood, like probably many of you did. I was abused in many ways by my mother and my stepfather and my family. I went to boarding schools, and I was a little half-white girl in an all-Indian school, and you know, it was an ugly picture. And I was 5 or 6 years old, and I realized somewhere along about that time that I could never count on anybody or anything. And I believed somehow that if there was a God, that He wasn't there for me, and that I would never be able to gain any strength from that, and that anything that I did had to come from myself. The problem was is that I didn't have any power. I didn't have any skills. I had no idea how to take care of myself, although I had been doing the best I could since I was just a little girl. And as I got older, I when I turned 20, I had a little boy, and I had no idea how to take care of him. I was impatient. I neglected him. I I abandoned him emotionally. I abused him physically. And I did all those things that I thought I would never do. That I thought that because my family did that to me, I would never do that to my son, to my children. And I did. I didn't know any other way. A whole bunch of things started happening to me about the time I turned. I think I quit drinking a little over four years ago, but I picked up another addiction. I started smoking marijuana, and when I was drinking it, I used to go out. I used to party. When I was drunk, I could do things that I normally couldn't do. I could make people laugh. I could go out and talk to people. You know, I could do all those things that I was too scared to do when I was sober. I was very insecure. I am very insecure still. And when I started smoking that marijuana, it took me back to be somebody who is very isolated, and I cut myself off from the world. You know, during all this time, I was going to college. I was getting ready to get a degree in social work. And I felt like a fake, and I felt like a phony. And I knew that anything that I got, anybody who cared for me, and anything that I accomplished it was nothing, because I was nothing. And I was faking it. And I don't know how I got through so much of that stuff. I had a sponsor who told me one time that if it was God's will that I got through it, that's what was going to happen no matter what. And that's what I believe today. And what started happening was there was a few things that happened to me. I started smoking so much marijuana that I couldn't even think. And one day I was taking my little boy to school, and I came from Alaska. I lived in Alaska for 13 years in Anchorage, and I just got back here in November or December. And it's real snowy, and when the plows don't come through, you know, there's a lot of berms, and it's just a mess up there. And I was taking my little boy to school, and I had a big four-wheel drive truck, and he walked in front of the truck. And I already, as soon as he got out of the car, I was already thinking about what I was going to go do. I was already thinking about going back home, getting high, getting ready for school. And he got out, and he fell down in front of the truck, and I started to drive. And he jumped up, "Mom!" and he screamed. And I don't know how he got up so quickly. Thank God he did, because I almost ran him over. And I saw, at that same time, I saw they were fixing our road. And there was a big tree, like one of these trees out here in a yard. And I was driving down this road, and I saw this tree get mowed over by a big tractor. Just as I was driving by, and it cracked, and I heard that snap. And I started crying. And I thought, that's me. That's what's going to happen to me if I keep doing this. And, you know, I was doing my senior internship in my social work program. And I was working in a facility for recovering pregnant women. And they were horrible, horrible detoxing ladies who were anywhere from a month to 6 months pregnant. And they were rough girls, you know. And here I was in this facility trying to help them quit using alcohol and drugs. And every night I was going home and I was getting high. And I knew that this was wrong. I knew in my heart that what I was doing wasn't right. And that I couldn't help them. I couldn't help them. And I wondered what the heck I was doing there every day. And this lady came in one day. I was co-facilitating a group for, it was our spirituality group. And I was supposed to be co-facilitator, and the regular lady wasn't able to come in one day, so my field instructor came in into the classroom, and she was going to co-facilitate with me. And she took over the class, and what she said changed my life. She got up in front of the class and she asked everybody, "What is spirituality?" And you know, I had no idea. I had no idea, and I'm sitting there thinking, God, don't look at me and don't ask for any help, because I don't know. And she went up to the chalkboard, and she was so clear, and it was the first time that I thought that I might be able to have some spirituality, that I might be able to let go of this disease that I had, because she made it so simple, and she made it so clear. And what she said was, all spirituality is when you do the things that you know are right. She says, that's all it is. If you're doing things in your life that you know are wrong, that feels wrong to you, if you're getting high, if you're using dope, if you're hurting your children, if you're drinking and you know you shouldn't be drinking because you're pregnant, and you know that inside your heart, but you do it anyway, you're incongruent. Now, I'll never forget that word, incongruent. Your life is incongruent because you're doing something that you know you shouldn't be, or that you don't want to, but you can't stop it. And I could understand that. I knew what was right and wrong. I didn't know that it had anything to do with spirituality. I thought that had to do with God, you know, and church and religion. But that was my start, that little piece of information that she gave to me. That was where I started, and I was able to drive home that day and think that I could do that. I could do what was in my heart. And that's when I quit. And at the same time, I had been trying to let go of this marijuana little by little. And I ran out. And I didn't know where in my normal dealer, he didn't have any. And I went to a girlfriend's house who had been trying to get sober. And she had been attending meetings and talking to me about them, and I thought, yeah, you need to go. You know, I thought she was crazy. I'd quit drinking, and we used to go out partying together, and she was always out. We were crazy. And she had continued doing that, and I had stopped. I had started isolating myself. I didn't go anywhere, and I didn't see anybody. So I thought that I was doing okay. You know, I thought that it was okay for me to do that, since I wasn't out there causing, wreaking havoc, driving drunk, and she still was. And I thought, yeah, you need to go, you know. And she was sharing things with me, and I went over to her house one night late and asked her if she could get me some dope, and she said, and she tried, you know, and here she is trying to get sober. And she couldn't find any, and I remember sitting there on her couch, on her chair, for hours, thinking, I gotta do something. I was hurting inside. Feelings were coming up, and I didn't know what the heck to do with them. I didn't even know what they were. And so I went. I sat there on that chair because I knew something was gonna happen. I knew that no matter what, I was gonna get high, and I was terrified of drinking. I was terrified of it. I hated what happened to me when I drank. I hated it. I never wanted to do it again. And I remember, I finally got up off that chair, and it was about 2:00 in the morning, and the bars stay open pretty late in Anchorage, and I finally left, and I was sitting there on my hands thinking, I just need to get through this time, just get through this time, don't drink. Well, I knew immediately what I was going to do, and I jumped in my truck, and I started driving towards my house, and I went to the bar that was closest to my house, and I got there and I walked in, and I knew the whole time what I was going to do. I walked in there and I said, I want a Budweiser and a shot. And this lady, she looked at me and she goes, lady, she says, we just called last call a couple minutes ago. And I just looked at her and she said, let me go see if I can get you one. And I knew at that moment that it was over. You know, it was all done, and I was all done, and I just threw up my hands, and I said, that's okay, lady. And the next day I went to AA. And I know that that was my higher power working for me. You know, they didn't close that early. Why? I don't know why they did that night, but it was closed and I couldn't get my beer. And that's how I got here, you know, through those things that happen and hearing this lady talk about spirituality in such a simple way, going to get beer when I didn't want it, and it not being there for me, almost hurting my child. I could see those things. I could see them, and I knew that they would continue. Sometimes when I speak in a meeting, I've talked about what I had this vision for myself of what I was going to be like if I continued to use alcohol and drugs, and I didn't like it. I didn't like the way that I saw myself. You know, one of my friends the other day, we were driving down the road, and there was a lady with two men, and she was homeless, and he says, "Gosh, I feel sorry for the ladies like that." You know, and she's just all dirty and you know, they're just walking around town and they look so pitiful, you know. And that's how I knew that I would be eventually if I continued. Today things are a lot different for me. I quit using all forms of mind altering chemicals in March of 92. I've got almost 2.5 years of sobriety. When I got into this program, I was ready. You know, I was ready to change my life. I wanted something different. I was terribly lonely. I had nobody. I didn't even know how to find somebody. And what I found here was fellowship. I found a lot of people who were willing to talk to me and accept me just as I was. And God, I'm grateful for that today. I couldn't accept that before, you know. In my first four step, it was me. I thought that I was justified in keeping myself from other people because I really believed that they would hurt me. I thought that I was justified in drinking and using because I needed it because of the things that happened to me. And somehow, with the help of a sponsor, the help of the steps, I realized that if I kept, that I didn't need to keep hanging on to those things. And as long as I kept hanging on to them, I would always be alone. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to be alone anymore. I didn't want my son to grow up alone. You know, I had this friend in sobriety. She's a bulimic. And she's had a really hard time with her bulimia. And somehow or another, I was kind of a hard ass girl when I came into this program, and she was real victim. You know, she was really a victim, and somehow we ended up having to work together for 8 or 9 hours a day. And I'd sit across from her in this desk and I'd watch her, and you know, I'd say mean things because I wanted her to do this. I want to control her, I want to manipulate her. And she was just the opposite. You know, she'd sit across from me and I'd say something and she'd get these great big tears in her eyes. And I think, oh shit, I did it again, you know. I'm hurting somebody again. And here's these two girls, were just the opposite, and we became friends. And she started relapsing. And I was so close to her. She meant so much to me. And I think that probably she was the first person I ever loved. And I sat there with this girl day after day, and I watched her start going into her relapse, and I was newly sober, and I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand it. And so I started trying to make her better, you know, somehow or another. I couldn't accept my friend, this person that I loved, relapsing. I thought that I didn't want that to happen because she was the first friend I ever had in a long time. And one night I realized that the reason why I wanted this girl to stay sober and to not relapse was so that I could have a friend. Not because I wanted her to be happy. Not because I wanted her to feel good about herself. I wanted a friend who was sober. I wanted a friend who could help me and could be my buddy, you know. And if she was to relapse, she couldn't be that. Because I couldn't do that with her. And I had to accept that. I had to watch her with her circles under her eyes. I had to watch her go and do these things that I used to do. And I had to accept it and love her anyway. And she taught me, what she taught me through these, gosh, it was probably a good 6 months. I had these high expectations for her. I wanted her to be good. I wanted her to be perfect because I wanted her to be my friend. And I realized that I was doing that to a lot of other people in my life, like my father, my brothers and sisters. And I was slowly pushing everybody away from me. And I did that all my life. All my life. And I didn't want to push her away. And I had a lot of false pride. And I had a lot of... when all these things were happening, the first thing I wanted to do was say, get the hell away from me. Get out of my life. You're going to hurt me. I'm going to get hurt. And what ended up happening is that I had to support her no matter what. I had to be her friend no matter what, like other people were to me. And I remember having to call her, and it'd take me 2 or 3 days. It'd take me a week, you know, and just to say I love you. Just to say, are you okay? And it was really hard for me to do that because I was mad at her. And what I learned from that was I started being able to give a little bit of the unconditional love to somebody that was so freely given to me in this program. And that was the true beginning of my, you know, that was a new step in my sobriety. That was a new place for me. And we became friends, you know, and later on we stayed friends, and as she got out of the relapse and started back into recovery, she came up to me one day, we were sitting outside, and she said, thank you for calling me, thank you for telling me you love me, thank you for telling me that it's okay, thank you for continuing to be my friend. She says, because that's one of the things that helped me get through this, through what I had to go through. And that to me is the spirit of this fellowship. You know, that's what people did for me too. When I was ugly with them, when I didn't want to listen, when I thought people were wrong, when I thought I was right, when I was stubborn, they were still there. People were still in the rooms. Where I got sober was in Anchorage, and we had a lot of meetings. You know, we had, it was a city, and we had meetings from 6:30 a.m. till midnight. And so I was able to go to a meeting any time. And you know, there was always people there trying to get sober just like me. They were always talking the steps. My home group, I was real lucky to find a home group that every week we had a day that we studied the steps. We had a day that we studied the traditions. And we had a day that we read the big book. And that's how I got sober. I went to those meetings, and I learned about the big book. I didn't do anything, everything in it, and I didn't do all the steps, and I tried to get away with things, but I heard it. I heard it all the time. And I was glad, you know. Today I'm real grateful for that because I learned a lot. I learned what the big book says. I learned how to do it. Sometimes I choose not to do it. I don't want to do it. But I know it's there, and I know it works because it's kept me here. I keep coming back. I tried many ways to get sober. I thought I could do it on my own. I always thought I could do it by myself, and I always went back out. So I know that, you know, that this program worked. It worked for me. I know many people say that, you know, that they tried on their own and it didn't work. And it's the same for me. I don't think, you know, when I drank, I couldn't control my drinking and I had no idea what was going to happen. I had no idea what would happen. I did a lot of crazy things and I found myself in a lot of crazy places. And I never knew. You know, I heard somewhere that the only thing that I knew was that I couldn't predict what was going to happen. The only thing I knew with complete certainty is that I didn't know what was going to go on. And today, you know, I can get up in the morning and I can know what's going to go on. I can know if I'm just going to stay at home. I can know if I need to go do something. I know what I did the night before. I know who I was with. I know what I said. I used to wake up, and the first thing I would do was go check and see if my truck was okay. I would go check in my son's room to see if he was okay, because sometimes I left him by himself, and he was just a little baby. Sometimes I would have to call his grandma to find out if he was over there, because I didn't know where I left him. Those things don't happen to me anymore. And I'm glad. I lived in a lot of fear. I lived in a lot of terror, a lot of confusion when I drank, when I used drugs. Today I get real confused about things too. You know, I realized when I was starting to get sober that there were things that I needed to learn that I had no idea about. Treating people with kindness. I didn't know anything about that. All I knew was how to treat people good if I needed something. I had a lot of expectations. And they said to be kind without wanting anything back. I didn't know anything about that. They said fake it till you make it. I knew how to do that. And sometimes I do that. I still do that. I didn't know how to forgive. I didn't know how to do that, and I had to learn how. And I'm not real good at it. You know, I like to hang on to things, and I still do. I hung on to some things for a lifetime, for all of my life, and I'm learning how to let those things go. Today, I can let things go a lot quicker. I've been hurt as bad as I've been hurt when I was drinking. But, you know, I know that I don't have to carry that. I don't have to drink over it anymore. I had to learn how to love. I didn't know how to do that. I thought that to love somebody was to be weak. I thought to care for somebody was to give up something of yourself. I thought that it meant that you weren't a whole person. That's what I thought, that if you love somebody, that's what was going to happen to you. You know, today I don't think that's true. I don't always do it. I'm scared to do it. I was scared. I have a little baby. She's just about a month old. I was scared to love her. I'm still scared. You know, I wanted to give her up because I thought I can't take care of her. I can't love her. But you know, I can. I can do that. You know, I do love her. I want to protect her. That's a big change in me. I could never do that before. I couldn't do it for my son. I might not do it right. So I kept the distance there. Today we have to deal with that, you know. And it's not easy. But you know, I look into his face and I look into this little girl's face. when I see myself, and I see that other people care for these children, and they love these children, and I know that, you know, that they love me too. And I know that only by the grace of God and through this program. And I thank God that I had a sponsor. You know, a lot of people, I hear people say that they needed someone to be tough with them, to be rough with them, to tell them that they had to do this and they had to do that, or they wouldn't have got sober. It wasn't like that for me. I needed somebody to care for me. I needed somebody to accept me. I needed somebody to talk to me nicely. I'd never known that. And that's what somebody did for me. It takes all kinds in this program, you know, and my sponsor did that for me. Every day I heard her say, "I love you." That's how she talked. And I hated it. You know, I hated it when she said that. And she said it to almost everybody. And she used to tell me that everybody goes through their lessons, and that everything I did was my lessons. Everything that happened. And even for my little boy, you know, what he went through, he has his own lessons. And that's okay. That he has to get through them, his own self. And that he's lucky to have a mom who's in sobriety, who's learning to live in a spiritual way. And he can see that and be a part of that. And maybe things won't be so hard on him. Maybe he'll learn his lessons at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A lot earlier than I did, and a lot earlier than a lot of other people did in this program. And I pray for that. I pray for him that way. You know, that somehow or another, you know, the things that he needs to learn, he can see them today. Because he gets as much out of AA as I do. He gets a sober mom. He knows how to read the steps. He knows how to read how it works. You know, there's been people that have asked him to read in a meeting, and he'll do that. You know, and he'll be glad to do that. And he loves to go to meetings because he says there's nice people there. There's people that I can trust there. There's people that we trust there. And this is from a little boy who from the age of got a year old, was left by himself. He didn't have a lot of trust in me. He had to wake up and take care of himself because his mom couldn't do it for him, and he didn't have a whole lot of faith in adults. But he has faith in you guys, just like I do, you know. And that's the first time we ever had that. So for me, I'm real grateful for that. I'm grateful that I learned how to trust people, they learn how to trust you, because it helps me out there in the world to trust others. And Gil's sneaking over here to me now. Are you going to see if I'm a dead? Anyway, you know, that's why I keep coming back, and I will keep coming back, because I still don't want to drink anymore. I'm grateful that I didn't drink today and in the days that in the past 2 years, you know. And I know that the only way, I had a friend, you know, it was a really sad thing that happened to him. He was sober for many, many years and helped many, many, many people. And somehow or another, 7 or 8 years sober, he decided he didn't need to go to meetings anymore and he didn't need to work the steps anymore. And he somehow went back to that old thinking that he could do it himself. And I still get that old thinking. And he still did a lot. He still worked a lot, but he was miserable. He was absolutely miserable. And he killed himself. And he said it was because he never wanted to drink again. But he, for some reason, had too much pride to come back into this program, to start coming back into the fellowship, and to start talking to people and working those steps. And I don't want that to happen to me. You know, I say a lot of times that I'd rather be drunk and miserable than just miserable, you know. I don't know. I think that the other thing I heard one of my friends say in my home group the other day, that it scares him to hear that if he goes back out there, he doesn't know if there's another recovery. It scares me to hear that too, because I think that there's been a lot of people who've relapsed and come back. And I pray that if I relapse, if something happens, that I find my way back here. I pray that there's another recovery in me, you know. And all of you too. Because I believe in that higher power. I believe in the Great Spirit today. I believe that if we want it, we can get it. You know? I don't know that I'll never drink again or ever use again. I still have those thoughts. I still think sometimes that, God, it'd be nice to just get high. Be nice to just sit back and not worry about it anymore. I still think that way. I don't know if that'll ever go away. I have not thought so far to go get it, you know, to make a plan for that. I hope that I never do. And, you know, when I just know that this is the program that's worked for me, and it's given me far more than just sobriety. It's given me a lot more. It's given me a family outside of the one that I already have. They say that your family, your friends are the family that you choose. And this is the family that I choose. And I'm glad that you guys are all here, and I'm real thankful for all the people and all the work that they've done here, this pretty place. I'm grateful for my little girl, for my little boy, and for the other people that have helped me since I moved from Alaska to here. And, you know, I'm glad that you guys are here, and for all the newcomers, you know, it works. You just got to keep coming back. They used to tell me all the time, well, we were always told, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I did that. And they also said, go to meetings and don't drink between meetings. And if you keep doing that, you know, it's going to be hard to find the drink, you know. Don't drink between meetings and keep going. And that's what I do. That's what I do today. And, I just want to thank Gil for asking me to speak. And as scared as I was, it's okay. You know, it's okay today. So thank you.